Don't tell PETA.
Did y'all know that this episode is titled The Military Draft? Should we talk about that?
We'll see.
I prefer my bacon unkicked, thank you. Some folks are born made to wave the flag. Ooh, they're red, white, and blue.
And when the band plays, hail to the chief. It's very difficult to maintain a straight face and composure in light of the kind of shit that Jordan says on a regular basis.
And yeah. I feel like y'all are so, like, I feel like this should be like, we should put money in a jar for something. Sats in the jar. Sats in the wallet. Because I feel like I know somebody's talking and saying something serious, and I just kind of do something stupid. To see who will laugh, and I usually get a couple of y'all, and then I'm saying something, and y'all try to say, and I feel like I keep my composure slightly better than, I don't know. We need a poll.
Nah,
Who keeps their cool?
You can't keep composure for shit.
You're in the closet, for God's sakes.
God damn it, we're like not even 2 minutes in, and you've already outed me.
For like 4 out of the 7 weeks, and always in a different location. You got your mic turned backwards.
And he's Spooksville. It's just the closet's just another location.
Welcome to the shit show. Hey, everybody, welcome to Bitcoin Veterans. We are live. We are also Bitcoiners and veterans. Pretty self-explanatory. I am joined by Jordan, aka Operation Closet, Alex Stanzik, Gabe, and also known as Gandalf, and the legendary Mike Hobart. Welcome, gentlemen. Thank you guys for joining us again. This is our 7th episode. If we get through this one, we're in the top 90% of podcasts all time.
What do you mean if?
Not going to happen.
We need to get a shirt for Gabe that says call sign Gandalf.
I love it.
Oh, that'd be dope.
Gandalf 06.
So Bitcoin Veterans is a podcast. We try to do this at a regularly scheduled time at 9 p.m. However, with the travel schedules of Jordan, always on the move and everybody else, we've had to shift some things around, and we're trying to get this done no matter what during the week. So I think probably once, maybe the school year hits in most parts of the country, maybe this will be more of a regular time that we land on. But for the most part, 9 p.m. Eastern on Wednesday nights is when we do this. And we get together and we talk about a whole things as they pertain to Bitcoin. So tonight, something came across the blotter, I guess, earlier in the week, and we were talking about it behind the scenes and said, hey, this would be a really great topic to start off with. The military draft has reared its ugly head in a lot of discussions that I've seen. I think they're kind of like testing the waters to see how absolutely unpopular this is going to be. But there was an article from military.com. It was written by this Joe Plensner guy, who is he's a part-time, coach for, C-suite businesses and all that fun stuff. And he's also a former Marine, or I guess a retired Marine, if you will, that was part of the infantry and public affairs branches. And I went through this article and kind of was just like, oh my God, there's so much wrong with this article from military
garbage.
Yeah, military.com. One of the things that I found really interesting in here was the part where he was talking about how the feckless, quote, the feckless politicians using the military as a club to batter their opponents have exasperated increasingly negative public opinion, despite the fact that our military has crushed international terrorism and prevented another large-scale attack on the homeland for 22 years and running. Guys, I mean, anybody want to take a first shot at old Joe here?
In what world are we winning against terrorism?
What part?
That's
was
all
that?
I'm gonna say.
Yeah, we have clearly the timelines have split and they're somehow intermingling.
Like, I definitely did not see that episode.
No, I missed that one.
Yeah.
Jesus fuck.
I mean the spotless pullout in Afghanistan and
was spotless. You know,
I know we're laughing about this, but in this one paragraph, he sits here and he basically says, hey, DC and all the feckless politicians, you know, the same politicians that are supposed to declare war in an end state and bring guys home and you know, have real missions and goals. These are the same feckless politicians that you think that maybe we should reinstate a draft with. You know, these are the guys that should be, you know, sending people off into the military grinder for wars, possibly in Ukraine or Europe or the Middle East or wherever in the world that their, you know, American interests are. That to me just
a contradiction.
Smacks yourself in the face. And you're like, hey man, you're saying all of this out loud in an article for everybody to read about a military draft. Who wants to really just get going here?
Well, all right. I mean, first of all, you know, it's an opinion piece, and it's a terrible opinion, in my estimation. But I mean, the fact that he's throwing it out there, I believe, first of all, is clickbait for him just to toss out that stuff. I mean, that's incendiary in the first place. Start talking about the draft. If you want to freak people out, then go ahead and do that. Whether or not how accurate it is or not, spotless pull out. But I don't know much about the guy. You know, I appreciate his, you know, thank you for your service to our country. But that doesn't always mean that you have an opinion that is accurate or valid. Having said that, it does seem that, you know, there are a lot more people that are talking about it. It is more of a topic of conversation. People are talking about the draft, you know. This is the same population that when they see National Guard vehicles rolling through their town like they do every year, they begin posting stuff that, you know, the government is setting up and it's, you know, they're getting ready to take over everything and everybody's getting ready to you know, be on lockdown, which is so far not accurate. But you know, and there was, I saw another post that was similar to that. One of our national legislators posted something about, you know, we don't have enough brave young people that are enlisting in the military right now. And there was some dialogue and some responses to her comment that were interesting. I think Preston Pish had some comments that he shared and some thoughts with her. And I, as did I, and my sentiment to her was, you know what, that might have to happen. So let's start with the brave children of our political leaders and executives from the defense industry.
So brave.
Cause yeah, go for it. I mean, show us where the brave youth are. Okay. If we're going to do the Hunger Games, let's start with your kids. And not send ours. Wow. You know, I mean, if any of my children ever do join the military, I would prefer for it to be voluntary and it will be under some pretty strong and realistic advisement. But, you know, draft, I don't think so. And I'm not sure where they would actually get the talent for a draft anyway. The majority of Americans are not qualified to serve in the military. It's just the reality. I served as a recruiter for the Army for over 3 years. I don't feel bad about it.
I'm sorry.
Thank you. I don't feel bad. I was the recruiter that you never heard of that actually told people the truth. When they asked me if they were going to war, I said, yes, you're going to war. This was during the height of activities in Iraq and Afghanistan. And I enlisted people in the Army and they did go to combat.
You're a diamond in the rough is what you were saying.
Yeah, I got to tell you, the first year of recruiting was the toughest year of my life because my station commander hated my guts because I just wasn't going to lie to them. And so the recruiting numbers dropped because the person before me did lie to them. And so, I mean, our recruiting station had a bad reputation like most recruiting stations do because a lot of recruiters are just full of shit and they're going to say what they got to say to get numbers. But I can tell you, even the ones that did come to me that wanted to join, that were pissing vinegar, blood and guts, ready to go out there and fight and serve their country. The majority of them just did not meet the basic qualifications, whether it was height and weight or physical capabilities or some underlying medical condition that would be revealed through the examinations. But most Americans aren't qualified to serve, at least if we use the current standards that are in place, which I would anticipate are going to continue to be lowered to increase enlistment. They're going to increase the amount, the dollar amount of enlistment bonuses. Yeah. I believe that they'll stop loss service members before they institute a draft, of course. I mean, there's a process that goes with this. They don't, the DOD doesn't just say, okay, you know what? We're doing a draft. Line up, shave your head, get these boots on. You're going to war. It's not how they do it. That's right, Lee. They change the qualifications. Yep. They begin to let in people with you know, more severe crimes. And you know, they drop the standards for health. And yeah, but before they even draft, yeah, they stop loss people. And we've probably all seen stop losses. And for those that are listening, what stop loss is if you're scheduled to be released from the military, they basically stop that. They stop the process of losing that individual from the military. And so they'll stop loss people. I believe that they'll recall, which they have, recalled some individual ready reservists for some specific duty that they're not talking a lot about, but they'll recall people. And then I believe what they'll do is they'll recall people that are not in IRR, but still meet the basic qualifications. Good luck, Coin Father. But, but before that happens, before the draft happens, they're going to go through all those steps. So I believe it's sensationalist to just throw a thing out there, throw an article out there in military.com, especially, that says, oh, the draft is coming. Everybody better freak out and, you know, move to Canada. I don't see it happening like that. There's a process that has to take place. But even so, I mean, if we get to that point, I don't even know what that conversation is going to look like, but I know that it's not going to be pretty.
Well, not to mention, like, personally, since I think I was definitely the most recent in the military out of the group. And even when I went through basic back in 14-15, and I was embarrassed to be a part of a military that had like behavioral psychological stress cards. I was like, are you fucking kidding me, man? Like, yeah. This is the Army. Like, and you guys are giving out waivers because people don't like to get screamed at by the drill sergeants. Like, how is it possible to grow up in America or to even know about America as far as on a global standard and not know to expect if you go into any military branch, you're going to get screamed at in basic training? Like, it's just ridiculous. And furthermore, I am and I was embarrassed to be a part of a military whose standard involved individuals that were fat within the uniform. Like, I couldn't, I, and that probably mixes with my stint in academia with exercise science. Like, I couldn't freaking stand it. And lowering these draft standards, like Gabe, like you were talking about, like just getting to the point of where we're just going to take in all the blubber bodies we can, and we're just going to fill the ranks with them. Like, we think that like just numbers alone makes an army. Like, are you kidding me? Like, I think I said this in a response on Twitter to like Preston Pish's tweet, was that I would rather, I personally think that a standing military is going to be more effective with a smaller force that is capable and capable of acting with precision and power than a force that's full of, like I said, blubber bodies. And what, we're just going to use them as cannon fodder? This isn't the fucking Revolutionary War. Like, we're not just sending guys out in lines to soak up lead so that the people in back can like fight the exhausted enemy when we get there. Like, it's just, this war is different. I mean, war is obviously the same, like, as conceptually, but like the way we fight it is very different than what it used to be. That's just not a recipe for success.
No.
So here's a thought. You know, the article might just be a trial balloon.
True.
Heck, like, yeah.
What they might be realizing is, okay, nobody's signing up. We're probably not going to get anybody to sign up. So let's float this and see how the public reacts to it.
Trying to break the service tension.
Yeah. So there's that. The second thing that I was thinking is that the worst part of a draft for the United States is the fact that we've got this perpetual war machine that's been going on pretty much as long as I've been alive, with very few pauses. And you got to ask the question, why are we doing that? Like, are we really spreading freedom and democracy around the world, or are we fueling the military-industrial complex? Because all those bombs have to be replaced. All those tanks have to be replaced. All those aircraft have to be replaced. And it's a very expensive process to do so. So what's up with the Pentagon not being able to pass an audit for the last decade plus? I mean, there's something like $10 trillion missing.
Oh, it's 20 years now after with the whole Rumsfeld thing the day before September 11th.
Right. So the question becomes, where the hell did all that money go?
Yeah. And here's to your point, Alex. I think you had mentioned this on Cafe Bitcoin this morning, and I was, you know, sitting there hanging out listening, and I looked up some numbers. $3.8 trillion of equipment. They can't account for over 60% of that equipment alone. That's crazy. I mean,
really?
I mean, I don't know, you know, in terms of spending, you know, what amount of, you know, the past 20 plus years that we've spent, you know, I don't know what that $1 trillion number is, but if we had, you know, somewhere around $4 trillion worth of equipment purchased and we can't account for 60% of that stuff, I mean, a lot of that's probably over in Afghanistan, you know, that we left behind. I'd say a fraction of it. But the fact that they, like, I mean, billion. You can't pass an audit, you know, with your DOD. This should be, it should be simple, right? If in a country where there's skin in the game, where there are people that are saying, hey, yeah, you know what, we should be doing this. And, you know, this isn't all put on, you know, black, you know, skunk works and all that other kind of stuff. Yeah, you should be able to do something like that. And so the idea that, you know, now that after 2020, 2021, especially, where they started saying, hey, you got to get the jab or you got to get out. And, you know, and I don't know what, you know, we'll see you later, maybe YouTube. But the fact that they didn't think this through, right, to the point where you're going to get rid of guys that have been in since about 2001 at that point. Literally the guys that ran in after 9/11. That was my generation. They ran in, they said, you know what, let's go do it. We were still star-spangly awesome and all that fun stuff. And those guys went on deployment after deployment after deployment. They rode them like thoroughbreds. And then at almost 20 years, they said, you can either do this or you can get the fuck out. And we may charge
no
you.
No benefits, no nothing. You might get out with a other than honorable discharge, maybe even a dishonorable, which, by the way, for civilians, a dishonorable is the equivalent of a felony.
Yeah, you don't want that.
Crazy. Well,
and then what was it, like 50% of the Navy SEALs that they were saying no, and they were like, we're gonna kick you. I'm like, we're seriously considering kicking out 50% of the Navy SEALs? Are you fucking dumb?
Group One came out and was like, you guys,
how are we gonna blow up another Nord Stream if we need to? Hi, YouTube, sorry.
Yeah, allegedly. And we're done.
We're still getting comments from there.
Right. But to bring it into context of Bitcoin, right? So the whole point of Bitcoin is that it's a way where you can hopefully put
Bitcoin's fanboy in you, Alex.
Put the fruits of your labor into something that's going to continue to grow in value versus something that's going to be debased in value, which is the United States dollar. So you got to ask the question back to, where did that $10 trillion plus dollars go? What are they doing all that money? That's taxpayer money. They're basically taking it from you.
Yep.
Right. So how do you protect yourself now? What are you going to do? And then I'll finish off the whole, like, this, you know, idea of a draft thing and lowering standards thing with, you know, the Biden White House just came out and said that, look, if you're a transitioned, whatever they call themselves, male, female, whatever the hell they are, you don't have to pass physical readiness standards and you don't have to deploy to combat. So what exactly are they doing with the military now?
What a joke, dude.
They're incentivizing getting rid of it. See ya. I don't have to have PT. Well, I don't have to go to combat anymore. No, let's just chop it off.
Well, there's these folks who apparently want to perpetuate the war cycle, right? Because I would assume there's a lot of money involved for some people. Yet, you know, they're basically dismantling the military from the inside out.
Yeah.
Well, and then, so there's one more thing I wanted to add to that, Alex. I'm getting the link for you here quick, Shane, if you want to see it. I don't know if you saw it since you've been
having
fun with the fans. Yeah. So as far as like the War Machine goes, there's also, if you guys haven't been seeing, some interesting developments coming out of the Horn of, or not the Horn, but Africa, specifically the West Coast of Africa. And the U.S. explicitly stated that with this coup d'etat that kicked off, that we were specifically going to remain in that area. And then I believe it's the forces. I can't remember the post. The I think it was the countries in orange were willing to stand up against the countries in green. And I believe we're on the green side, if I'm not mistaken. And it's just, it's like the only way it reads to me is just that, yeah, we're going to keep this war machine just turning along. Like if we have to send our boys and girls off to war in Africa for a coup d'etat, for a proxy war that we've been maintaining behind the scenes, we're going to do it. And nobody has to be educated on it. Nobody has to care. It's like, sweet, dope. Like what the hell is going on? Like it's just unreal, man.
Okay. Here's the thing about this whole military.com opinion piece about the draft. It's all bullshit. Okay. They already know that there's no chance that they're ever going to pull this shit off. What happened? I think it was 2 weeks ago when there was all this shit in the news about them calling up reservists. And yeah. People were like, oh, they're calling up reservists because they're going to start sending them over to Ukraine. No, they're calling up reservists to fill active duty positions. That's what the reserve is there for, right? And then 2 weeks later, you know, they already know, I think 2 weeks before that, it came out how low their recruiting numbers were. So, okay, recruitment numbers are down. Let's activate some reservists. A couple weeks later, let's throw out this piece about the draft to test the waters, like we said at the very beginning. That's all it is. And after 9/11, they tested shit like this to see if there was, because that was at the moment of like all this rah-rah American patriotism right after 9/11. And even when they floated out the idea for the draft back then, they knew it was like, it was a no-go. But also they didn't really have to worry about it because they had enough patriotic Americans like trying to show up and saying, hey, we want to defend our country, which was very noble at the time. But after 20 plus years of that shit and so many people, not only so many Americans who even during all that said, no, like I'm not going to go risk my life for that shit. After 20 plus years of that, you've got guys like us who like Gabe saying, if my kids want to join, I'm going to have a sit down talk with them. And I assume he means to talk them out of it because there are better options in life. And that is most Americans. We're just talking about it out of a group of military veterans who have been there. And most of us have been deployed and have fought for the empire, and we're the ones saying that. And this isn't just like us because we're Bitcoiners or because some of us are libertarians or some of us are fucking just anti-authoritarian or whatever the fuck the issue is. That's just the society. Like you talk to any veteran right now, I've got plenty of veteran friends that are on both sides of the blue-pilled political aisle who would all say the same thing. They would talk their kids out of it. And that wasn't the case before 20 years, you know, or yeah, earlier than 20 years ago. Like the times have changed. So understand that all this is bullshit. And please push back as much as you can on Twitter or whatever other social media you're on, because that is them gauging the temperature of it. It might seem fucking stupid, but like, please go out there and just keep ripping them a new asshole. I think they've already been ripped it wide open enough. But let's keep adding fuel to that fire to let them know, like, no, you checked the temperature and it was fucking too fucking hot. Get the fuck out of the pool.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I mean, we can talk more about this draft thing and I could tie it to Bitcoin, but let's just end the conversation. Like, this isn't happening.
Yeah,
it's never going to happen.
Yeah, and I think it's a good point that they are testing the waters. They do want to see what's going to happen. And this guy, you know, they said, get on out there and do this thing. They probably asked ChatGPT to write the article for him and include a couple of certain things. And boom, there you go. I mean, the guy's a Marine, for God's sake.
Probably okay? Not.
He's
off,
not
okay.
Using.
I don't think ChatGPT is stuff. Even stupid enough to say that America's been winning the war on terrorism.
Oh, it sure is. Have you not seen how that thing is indoctrinated, bro?
Yeah, that's touche.
But I do want to include this into the conversation, and then we can do whatever we need to do. That enlistment numbers tend to be affected by how healthy the economy is at any given time. Okay. When people don't have any money, yeah, I'm serious. When people are freaking broke and the military is the only option and they're offering enlistment bonuses of $20,000, people are showing up. Okay. I was recruiting during the recession. That's the 2008 recession. I was recruiting during that time, and I had mamas bringing their boys in, saying, son, you're going to join the army and you're going to send your check home to mama because we're mama's got to pay the rent. And they did it. And that's how it worked. And every single one of them, I said, listen here, kid, don't send your check home to mama. All right. You can help her out, because sometimes mama was just using them for a payday. And it's unfortunate, but it's real. You know, times get hard and people get desperate and they do things that they hopefully wouldn't otherwise do. But that is one of the things that is such a negative impact of the fiat system that we live in, is that they have the power to do that. They are in a position where they can crush our economy and hurt people so much financially that they make life decisions that they wouldn't make otherwise. And that's the importance of Bitcoin in this situation, is how can we set people free from the bondage of the fiat system so they don't have to resort to joining an institution that they otherwise don't believe in, that can end their life. And if not end it, it can certainly alter the direction of it forever.
Yeah. I mean, to your point, Gabe, I mean, when you got this fiat monster that can, you know, offer perverted incentives to guys, first and foremost, that are young, that are, you know, going to probably enter a job market after taking on loads of debt in college that might have it repaid. You know, housing is absolutely unaffordable now. All of these factors for, you know, putting forth perverted incentives is that, you know, that, you know, really sexy carrot at the end of the stick for a lot of these guys. And they're like, yeah, you know what, I'll go in, I'll do 4 years, I'll come out, you know, connected to this network and have college paid off for one thing. I will probably at least have, you know, all my meals and my housing paid for during that time. And, you know, maybe, you know, I'll do a deployment here or there, and I probably won't be a combat MOS. Like, that's a really ridiculous thing. And in this article, he goes on to say, today the military needs only about 160,000 youth from an eligible population of 30 million to meet its recruitment needs. 160,000. I think we were talking in one of our first shows about, you know, how we would know we were being effective in terms of taking people away from the ranks. And I think this is a really good sign, is the fact that there's an Overton window that these guys are pushing, you know, very hard right now, you know, and saying, hey, you know, maybe we should do a recruiting and a, you know, conscription, where you've got 11 months for the recruiters and then that 1 month where whatever gap that they don't have, we make it up with conscription, which is an awful idea. And so I guess kind of from a perspective of just, we're supposed to be, you know, America, land of the free, home of the brave, and nothing quite screams freedom like conscription, you know, bodily autonomy, right? Like, do you have the wherewithal to control the efforts of your labor or property rights? Do you own you, in other words? And in America, where if you don't own you, then that is tantamount to slavery. They're talking about conscription. You know, I mean, obviously par for the, you know, we're not a free country anymore, but that's got to be the position that I think most people come back to in terms of a right situation, is if you aren't entering into everything that you do via peace and consent versus force and coercion, then you've got a really big problem with the government. And I, you know, I don't think they're done. I think this is going to get worse, and it's going to be exasperated. You know, they're going to drop those. They're going to drop all sorts of recruitment, you know, numbers in terms of qualifications to do this. And I mean, they're going to have to, and they're going to sweeten the pot, I think, a lot. I think this is all part of the war that has been launched on the United States that a lot of people don't know is here. If you look at it, you know, the war in terms of taking out the U.S. military, depleting the ranks of really good people that are strong-minded. I think that's been done. I think the fact that you've got companies that are in a real hurt locker right now from pushing out the same type of people that were like, hey, I'm not going to get the COVID vaccine. And now they're facing all sorts of litigation over, you know, pushing these people out, not to mention a depleted workforce. They're attacking us on all fronts like they would another country. You know, this doesn't start with the gunshot. This starts with, the economic war, the war on
Gen 5 warfare.
Yeah, it is just death by 10,000 cuts, right? So I think that's where this is at.
I think both of y'all have kind of segued into another topic we thought about discussing with the whole rating of the U.S. credit rating being downgraded. And what I mean by that is, like, so we've talked about, and we've had some people even say in the comments, like, hey, I joined during 08 when there was an economic downturn. We're at this weird stage to join, like, the draft and the economic situation we're at and how they kind of converge is that typically during the economic downturn, you have a lot of unemployment, people looking for jobs. Well, everyone kind of knows that we're on the precipice of the economy turning, but right now unemployment is really low. So that now that's a reason why recruitment is low. So you can look at that from a few different directions. Like, do they want to tank the economy soon so that they can re-up their numbers and push the agenda that they're trying to do, maybe coupled with some other kind of international event that, rallies the morale of U.S. patriotism or whatever. But there's this weird convergence of, like, if they were already, as I think we've kind of hit on in some tweets and stuff that have been going around as regards to the credit rating, is like our death spiral is upon us. So how they can't work out. There's all these different converging factors of, we need more troops for our empire, but we can't afford the empire and the economy is collapsing. And to me, it seems like there's absolutely no way that they can get all these things to converge appropriately, whereas they have in the past, because they only had to deal with a couple of factors and they could kind of work those out, if that makes sense.
That's what happens. I feel like there's just a can.
Yeah. And I feel like we're at the end of the road for that can.
Yeah. Because every kick, you accumulate a couple more problems. Right. And then it's basically the way I see it. Like you were discussing, Jordan, is like every time they are kicking the can down the road, it's basically accumulating more converging factors into the vacuum of the can itself. Like, it's just,
yeah, there's more things out of their control every single kick.
Yeah.
And it starts out like a small little thing that they're not worried about. Do y'all watch The Foundation? This is a weird fucking segue. So awesome. You got to fucking watch it. But and I don't want to give too many things away, but right now in the show, there's this mathematical path they thought like humanity through the universe was supposed to take, but one little change made it split off. And that is creating one crisis event after another, that if they don't solve this current crisis, it's going to splinter off and just exponential. It's out of control and humanity goes in this bad direction, right? And that's what's happening with the fiat system, is they thought they could keep it going, and really it was that first kick that sent it careening down the wrong path, and it's getting too far out of control. But I think Bitcoin is the one thing that can fix it and bring everything back online in the way that most of humanity can prosper and survive and thrive.
Yeah. It's interesting when you look at the geriatric condition of our leadership of our country, and I use the word leadership very, very loosely and facetiously, but really, what do they care? They can kick the road another 10 years and they know that they won't be here. Okay. And yes, they probably have people that they care about. I know Grandpa Joe finally claimed one of his grandchildren that he wouldn't before. So he probably cares about somebody somewhere, if he knows that they exist or not. But the reality is, you're looking at people that seriously will not exist. Okay. In 10 years, they're not going to be alive. And what do they really really care? I mean, do they really? I mean, I think that they have demonstrated that they don't really care about their fellow humans to any real extent. And you can believe this, they have insulated their own people close to them, their legacies, they have insulated against the coming hardship as much as they possibly can. But as far as the general public, as far as the rest of us, as far as the maggots out here trying to make it, it doesn't matter. Okay. And they're not going to be here for people to, I almost said something I wasn't supposed to, but they're not going to be here to experience the severe repercussions that people are going to respond with when it gets to that point. And I believe that there's a very high likelihood that it will. And I'll get that.
All right. One other comment here. One of our, one of the people watching the show had commented that they're potentially fast tracking immigrants into the military, offering like fast track to green cards, things like that, if you join the military. And, one thing that concerns me about that, and this is not going to be true in all cases. I personally know people who did that. They were immigrants. They joined the military, served in the military. These were honorable dudes. They did, in my opinion, what was right. They knew what was up.
Yeah.
But if they do that, it could allow for the creation of units full of people, military people, with no cultural ties and allegiance to American values and culture, which is very dangerous in my opinion. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but like when I hear things like that, that's where my brain goes. Like, well, what is a serial potential problem here?
Did you see what they did in Illinois?
I did not.
They're allowing illegals to become police.
Yeah. I heard them.
Saw that.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. This came out, I don't know, maybe a day or so ago. It was all over the news, but your point, Alex, I mean, it's not unheard of to have, you know, mercenary groups like this. All the way back into the Revolutionary War, there was Haitians here on, you know, American soil, right? Where, you know, Washington crossed the Delaware. Yeah. So when Washington crossed the Delaware on Christmas Eve, to go over there and take those guys out, the guys he was taking out were actually the Haitians. There was, you know, some very mixed parties over there. And boy, I'll tell you, I mean, to have that going on possibly in our own military, or at least even at the, you know, the state level with police, which are in contact with American citizens that have no idea what the Constitution is. They have no idea what their rights are. They, you know, they don't share.
Those are different from cops now.
Yeah. They don't share a culture. You're going to get abused maybe in a different language. I don't know. I mean, but it's one of those things, right?
Lee was pointing out, he's trying to help you out here. Hessians, not Haitians.
Is that what I'm sorry. Thank
you. But there's also the, like, I agree with Alex. In the sense
we're all so retarded. We were just rolling along with Haitians.
Oh, they're Haitians. Goddamn
Haitians. Hell yeah, man.
There's sound problems.
There's also the concern that I could see where agreeing with Alex on the point of having like these like platoons or brigades or units or whatever that aren't necessarily aligned with American ideals and culture. But then there's also the risk of having those units out there with our, like, our culturally aligned guys, but then having our guys and our girls out there doing whatever, and then having the non-culturally aligned police force back home taking advantage of, like, our family, our friends, and our neighbors. Like, it's just like it's a multi-frontal, like, it's literally fifth generational warfare at that point. Yeah. I try not to be conspiratorial, but I do not see how this is like not intentional degradation, man. Like,
okay, so gentlemen, this has all been a very dark conversation. Now that the entire audience is incredibly depressed and probably needs therapy, let's talk about what the solutions are here. Do we have
solutions? I recommend bourbon for.
Bourbon.
Oh, you meant like things they could do to better the. Okay, sorry, Alex.
Yeah, so
nothing.
Silence.
Maybe if you're out there and you're a veteran, or you just are out there and listening to Bitcoin veterans talk, maybe you could start doing something with your assets. Maybe living within your means for one well within your means so that you can save and possibly look at this asymmetric asset that's called Bitcoin that nobody can confiscate. Mm-hmm. That is always, over time anyway, is going to gain value as more and more people come to it. I mean, if we're looking at, you know, what's about to happen with the halving here in April of 2024, and now that institutional money is here, you're still extremely early. I think Bitcoin's about, you know, what, 0.11% of the world economy right now. And if that grows to 1-2%, there's going to be a little bit more breathing room for you. And so if you've got a little extra that you can put in and start stacking now, start stacking sats, saving in Satoshis, which are a fraction of a Bitcoin, then those Satoshis are going to gain value over time. So are you going to be desperate for a house? Are you going to be desperate to feed your kids? Are you going to be desperate to in your daily life? Or are you going to have a little bit of a cushion? Are you going to be able to direct your wealth and possibly, let's just say, all hell breaks loose and they're saying, hey, you know what? Conscription is a thing and we're going to take as many people as possible to go fight the Eastern Front in World War III. Maybe you've got enough to bug out. Maybe you do have enough to say, hey, you know what? I'm not down for this. I don't want it. I don't want to do this. I've got family, whatever. I'm going to go and I'm going to, you know, expatriate myself somewhere else. You know, these are all options that you have, because if you leave, now you can take those seed words in your head with your Bitcoin and fuck off to another country where you don't have to deal with this bullshit. And that's a huge thing. So when you get there, and make no mistake, if you've ever been in a country that's at war or is going to war or is receiving refugees from a war-torn land, you get fleeced on the way out on physical borders because those people are going to take your shit. And then when you get to the next country, you're going to get shaken down because now you're a refugee and these people are going to be providing for you. So what do you have of substance? If you've got a nice stack going into another country, you've got real means now of avoiding the entire, you know, war machine, which I don't know how valuable that is to most people, but up into your life, that's a pretty valuable thing.
Sorry, Gabe. I was going to say, I've got like the 5 B's that I like to say to accumulate. That's bullets, butter, beef, barbells, and Bitcoin. Like those 5 would usually have you pretty settled as far as like the necessities. But I also want to just make a quick comment too, like on the point of you discussing like expatriation, I think it would be the word. Considering all the things that we've talked about and what a lot of veterans have learned painfully, it's like you don't really owe this country anything. Like if you have the capability and like the funds to protect your family and pick your family up and like flee a situation where they're going to try and forcibly remove you or your sons and daughters and send them off to a war that you don't believe in or understand, I don't consider that like treasonous action personally. Like you're beholden to your blood and your family first. Like maybe I'm wrong in that. Maybe that's like anti-American by some standards, but like with what a lot of our quote unquote leaders and politicians, specifically the corporate politicians, have done to things over the last 50 years, there's not a whole lot of justification for like people having any loyalty to them or the system right now.
All right. So that's outside of the Overton window of a lot of folks. Let me say this to those of you who you're basically patriots. You believe in this country. You love this country. You want to save this country. How do you do that? I've got a thought for you, and it's probably maybe not what you've thought of what you've heard if you're not a Bitcoiner, but I'll share it 1 second. I just want to address this guy, BTC Seaford, in the chat. He says he's in South Dakota, still waiting for Swan to get permission to operate. Bro, we got you. Just come talk to us. Like we switched custodians and we now have the MTLs to do South Dakota. We can do every state except for New York and Texas right now. And they're both coming too. All right. I'll get back. So let's get to what I was just talking about. Imagine for a second that there was this form of money that you could opt out into. And the amazing thing about this particular form of money is that it can't be taken from you no matter what. You see, US dollars can be taken from you. A court can order it be taken from you. Those funds can be frozen in your bank account. They can take it from you, right? They can take your property from you. They can take your house from you. They could take your bars of gold from you. All this stuff can be taken from you by force.
Yeah.
And this is the issue with all property since the beginning of man, right? You can use force to take stuff from other human beings, which is the reason why some people might argue, well, you might need to defend yourself as well, right? However, what if there was this one form of money that couldn't be taken from you because it lives in cyberspace? It's not actually a physical thing. Like, what if there was this one form of money that you could create a wallet and there were 12 or 24 words that were part of the backup of that wallet? You could memorize those words and carry the value of that wallet, whether it's $1,000 or $1 billion, you could carry it with you in your mind. What if you could do that? What if the only way, I mean, they could literally come to you at the point of a gun and say, give us the Bitcoin. And they could not literally physically take it from you. You would have to, for the first time in human history, volunteer that up. Now, some people might say, well, you know, they could torture you, or they could do this, that, they could throw you in prison. Sure, they could do those things, but you would still have to give it to them. And it's never happened before in history. So take that thought for a second and then realize, like, if enough Americans switched to that alternate system, just voluntarily, non-violently, peacefully, just took their labor and the fruit of their labor and just switched it into a different vehicle, right? This vehicle makes taxes voluntary again. You guys understand, in the beginning of the United States of America, there was no such thing as an income tax. Did you know that it was in 1913 that laws were passed that essentially made income taxes a thing? So prior to that, the government had to basically get your cooperation and your permission for the stuff that it wanted to do. It was essentially voluntary, excise taxes, things like that. So what if there was a system where the government had to actually be held accountable for what it spent money on? Because otherwise it wouldn't get any money. What if there was a system like that? Would that start to change the behavior of what we're witnessing? I think it might. So just something to consider there.
Yeah, that's an awesome point too, is the way that they conduct themselves is they do that because they know that nobody can stop them. They can take our money and they can fund their projects and fund their initiatives. And there's no accountability. There is no incentive for them to behave a certain way. And that includes interventions overseas. That includes the interventions at home as well. And that's an excellent point that you bring up as far as empowerment. And that's really where I see an opportunity for veterans to really get plugged into this, because we understand as well as, and probably better than most people in our country, what it looks like when governments are doing what they're not supposed to be doing and mishandling their resources to include their humans, and then railroading them into options that they don't like to have. Now, the fact is, not only does Bitcoin create the opportunity for each of us to empower ourselves into a position where we are less reliant, and hopefully not reliant at all on any form of government, but at the same time, it weakens government position. Thank you for that. I love that quote. It weakens government position and the coercion that they can use against us. When we weaken the fiat system, when we begin to kill the fiat system, then that gives them less leverage to use against us. When people have their own form of currency that they cannot manipulate, that they can't freeze our assets, they can't just take them away from us without having a mind reading machine that's going to take away our keys, which is probably what the orb is. I'm just going to say it. But hey, I went there. But the reality is also, you know, I'm going to bring it back just a little bit to the draft, because I mean, what happens when we have wars and they still need people to fight them and no one wants to join because they're like, F you, I don't have to join. I've got my own money. I don't need you. I'm fine. So what happens with that? I mean, other operators in the world aren't just going to, everybody's not just going to be nice and get along. And that's where, you know, we start to get into this realm of, you know, different types of warfare, power projection, war prevention. You know, when you start to go into the Jason Lowry territory of things, of using the Bitcoin network as a power projection. And that's, I mean, that's really what the, you know, a big element of his thesis, software, is about. I don't get royalties for that. I'm throwing it out there for a point of reference. That's an entirely different topic. We considered bringing it up here tonight. I'm not sure if we're going to or not. But the thing about that is, and the reason I bring it up, is that it changes the entire nature of warfare. It transforms the need for us to throw humans out there to get blown up, you know, whether they're blubber bodies or not, or whatever the situation is, it transforms the need for that. And also what it does, and this is a different layer, but I have suspicions in my mind. I have some theories that there are certain elements in place, call it the MIC or whatever, you know, we'll just use that for the fun of it, that they develop these new technologies to make war with, and they need humans to go out there and use them and test them and burn them up and, you know, make it so that they can go through their cycles of production of introducing new technologies into the system and just keep selling and selling and selling. Basically, what they're doing is they're creating their own market. And so they have to have, you know, people to go out there and put the AT4 on their shoulder, or, you know, use the javelin, or hop in the LMT, do all the, you know, break all the equipment, wear it out over a course of 20, 30, 40 years, depending on what branch you're in. So then they can introduce new products into the system, and it just becomes a perpetual cycle of them feeding themselves. It's an Ouroboros type of situation. Or self-fellatio, if you will. Can I say that on here?
Yes, you can. Fellatio is totally fine, especially okay, good. Jordan's talking about, you know, ripping butts and all that fun stuff. So.
Stay in the closet.
Ripping in the Terran.
So Lee says something that's kind of, I'm going to segue into this question to you guys. There will be a transition phase before hyper-Bitcoinization where nation states can still print fiat to fund carnage. Bitcoiners will have to run and hide until this phase is fully eats itself. A question for you guys. When I think about what is ideal for a country, let's just America for instance, right? We've got 60% of the world's guns in the hands of just civilians in America. My idea is that, you know, and I think a lot like the people that founded this country is like, look, man, if everybody's armed, you know, we're not going to have to worry about outside invasion. You know, we may take some setbacks, but we'll be able to repel it.
It diminishes the risk at least.
Yeah. What are your guys' thoughts on, let's just say we get into a hyper Bitcoinization world for the most part. I don't think we'll ever be 100%, but we get there. What does a national defense look like? Or is there still nation states to defend with that kind of projection of power? What do you guys think about, you know, how this kind of works out? Because, you know, people will say, well, what are you going to do? You know, you're just going to give up national defense. And I think my thought on that is, yeah, you know, I'm going to pay for what I think is important, and I don't think I'm going to fund anything else.
I think it makes it irrelevant. So all kind of until fiat came around, all warfare had to fund itself through the plundering and theft of some other nation. It's not a profitable enterprise. If you were to take, you know, like Blackwater or some other private corporation, private military corporation, PMC, under a Bitcoin standard, there's no way you could attract the level of expertise when it comes to operators that it would be. The only way to keep it funded to the level that it would take to accumulate good talent, for lack of a better word, would be just to steal and plunder. It would just be the same as in years past. And under a Bitcoin standard, I don't think you could afford to hire people, whether on a private end, doing like even if their goal was to do some really fucked up illegal shit, I don't think you could steal enough to make it worth funding the guys that it'll take under that those free market kind of conditions. And I think naturally warfare at the state level just changes. It's almost impossible to predict what it would change to, but I just don't think it would be anything near where we would have now. I mean, look at, we started this conversation off about how, like, to keep this military draft going, they're going to need like an economic downturn or something to really drive people to come take this shitty money. But people are already understanding that that's not worth it. And we even had that 20 years ago at the height of all this patriotism. That system is collapsing. So I guess the question is more about how is the hyper Bitcoinization distributed across the globe? What are the last fiats? Is that maybe why China is pushing back so hard on Bitcoin mining? And they kind of flip-flop back and forth between supporting it and not. Like, do they want to try to be one of the last fiat systems that can keep funding an empire through, because they've got the propaganda and they can get the fiat system and they've got the manufacturing to sell to others? Like, maybe that's their end game. They think they could be the last fiat system to withstand this. What will be the payoff? Like, if they go down that route, who do they sell shit to? Nobody wants their cheap shit anymore. The closer we go to that world, the less I think having a national defense even makes sense, because there's no reason to go to war. War is always about stealing from somebody to steal from somebody else to pay for the fucking thing. I don't know. I'd love to hear everyone else's thoughts. Maybe I'm too rose colored glasses.
Yeah. I have a thought here. There might've been a time where, you know, societies did exactly what you're talking about. I'm not saying that there isn't plunder and warfare, but there came a point in history where, countries did exactly like you said. You could only execute so much warfare based upon available resources, right? And eventually you run out of money. So there was a time when a lot of the world was operating on a gold standard, and they took those countries off of gold standards specifically so that they could increase the money supply and fund warfare.
Yep.
All right. So the only way that warfare is funded is when you have that separation of fiscal responsibility, and then you could then the sovereigns could go into debt, basically. I think it was one of the Rothschilds that basically said that the best customer is a country at war, right? So they have a history of funding those things. So that's the first thought. The second one is you ask the question, well, what does a military even look like if you have fiscal discipline? If you can't print endless amounts of money, how do you have the resources to build a military? I would suggest keep in mind that the military of America today did not always look like this, right? The founding fathers basically said, don't build empires, don't engage in entangling alliances, don't go to war unnecessarily, defend yourself essentially, and do commerce with everyone, right? Well, what did the military look like back then? It was completely voluntary, right? They didn't have, 11 deep water fleets or whatever the number is today, right? They didn't have troops in over 140 different countries or whatever the number is today, right? That didn't exist. It was all funded at the time of the Civil War, the Revolutionary War, that was all funded voluntarily by the civilian population. Like the original warships in the United States Navy were privately owned, some of them, right? So I think you see a much smaller military, and you see one that's more in line with what the country's founding fathers envisioned, which is, we are here to protect ourselves. We're not here to build empires all over the damn world.
Yeah, I saw a comment. How about a well-organized militia? That does sound familiar, doesn't it? And it's a totally different situation, okay? Because when we're not out there, when we don't have tentacles out there intervening and doing things that aren't necessarily productive, not even necessarily, but just aren't productive for the well-being of our actual citizenry, then what's the point? Now, yeah, of course, we have to defend ourselves, but over time, And it would take a while, because let's imagine a scenario if you know, the U.S. government said, we're no longer going to dabble in everybody's mess. Okay, we're going to pull back. We're only going to, you know, conduct business with you, and only certain, you know, and it would take a, it'd be a hell of a process. And of course, this is a total fantasy, but let's imagine that it did take place. The government, all right, they have created so many absolute enemies around the world that what would happen first would be each of them would see it as, many would see it as a sign of weakness, and they would try to come in and they would try to attack and so forth and so on. And they would all try. And if, you know, if we were able to defend ourselves, great. You know, if we truly do have a sniper behind every blade of grass and a strong cybersecurity network built on Bitcoin, then, you know, perhaps we could withstand a lot of attacks. And it would take a couple of generations for us to really get to a place where everybody that was responsible for all the bullshit finally died off. And then, you know, we would see a transition. But at the same time, I have to question the reality of that even taking place. They have gone so far. And when you just open up one of your borders and let in millions of people that go completely unchecked, I'm not sure what you can do about that. And then start, you know, recruiting them into the police forces and then filling the military with them. You don't really have a nation anymore at that point. And there is one distinction that I do want to make. And I'm kind of backtracking a little bit, but we're talking about the word loyalty came up a couple of times. And Mike, you were touching on it. And it just sparked something in my mind that as we're talking about these things, okay, we might sound like we're kind of tap dancing. We're pushing our toes over the line a little bit in some ways, but I believe it's important for us to make the distinction that loyalty to one's nation, loyalty to one's people, whether it's your people of your country or just people of the world, is completely different than loyalty to a government. Okay. The loyalty to a government that is completely debaucherous and bastardizes everything it touches by leveraging the power of its garbage fiat system, that is not something that any of us should question being disloyal to, because it is destructive in every single way, and that is proven. The loyalty that I believe many of us and many veterans that I experience any type of discussion with, the true loyalty is to one another. The true loyalty is to each other. The true loyalty is to our people, it's to other humans. And people will exercise that loyalty given the opportunity. And so it's not a question of loyalty, because I mean, there's no point in my life where I ever put my hand up in the air and I swore due faith and allegiance to my government. Okay, that's not that is not what I swore loyalty to. Okay, I swore
the Federal Reserve.
Definitely not them. But it's not a question of loyalty to, because there's a difference between the country, and there's a difference between the government, okay? And that we have so many people, these foreign actors in the world, and even just like regular citizens in other countries, say, I hate America. America is this and that. But the government is not America, okay? The government is not our country. They're the government, okay? They are an institution, and they are an organization, and they use us to do what they do. And once again, I will leave it at that.
I wanted to chime in as far as like, I'll be brief with like what the military looks like. I think it's going to get more feudal in the sense of states having their own. And I get on the surface that could sound like weakness as far as like for America broader, but two things. If you think about a family, how siblings will squabble, family members will squabble, but then as soon as somebody attacks the family, then everybody aligns and becomes very precise and very well organized in order to take out that enemy. I think that's probably what it would look like. And then I would also recommend that kind of as further support for that vision would be, do you guys remember when I think ISIS tried threatening that they were going to come to the U.S. mainland and make attacks on our soil, You remember who came up and made really aggressive defense for America? The freaking mob and the gang members. So, like, don't forget about those guys. Like, it's not like, because, like, it's not just that we have the military and the police. We have all of the other, like, the underground that likes making money off of, like, whatever's happening, illicit or otherwise here. So, like, yeah,
they're not going to let ISIS come in and move on their turf.
Exactly. Like, yeah.
Fuck you. We own this motherfucker. Don't think you're going to come over here and cut off heads. That's our fucking job, bitch.
Oh, man.
But it is an important thing to keep in mind, because they are a mercenary of a different flavor.
So I'm sure that's an interesting little take there. I'm sure a lot of people have probably heard, not a lot of people, but people have probably heard about the book, The Accidental Gorilla, or at least that concept of the Accidental Gorilla. Written by David Kilcullen. Well, okay. So the Accidental Gorilla is like a lot of these Afghans didn't want to fight the U.S. necessarily. They just were like, I'm a fucking sheep herder. I'm like tending my field or whatever. But like my father and his grandfather, you know, everyone fought, whether it was the Soviets or the English before that, all these empires that came to Afghanistan. It's like, it's just my duty to grab a gun and fight against an invading force. I don't even know where America is on a map, because I've never seen a fucking map. But these are fighting back.
Are in our country, we're going to fight them. That's what it is.
Well, kind of. But so the same dude wrote another book calling, it was called like Out of the Mountains or something. And he was talking about how basically he was trying to use his thesis to like help get support within the MIC to fund his idea of what the next wars were going to look like. And he was saying how it was going to be a lot of these, like coastal regions, that's where the wars are going to be fought, blah, blah, blah. But one of the biggest takeaways that I took from his book, and this was even back before I became an ANCAP, anarcho-capitalist, before I even like went down the libertarian road, I was still like going through the Q course when I read this book. And so I was very blue-pilled, but he was talking a lot about how all these failed states, whether it was like Somalia or like Central American countries, or even just like a city within a certain Central American country that had kind of like failed, and these warlords had like taken over, and they started kind of running the day-to-day business. And it was interesting how like they would have one of their like little low-level gang members would kill somebody, and they would like put him on trial and kill him, because they understood, even this legitimate like underbelly, underground criminal element that just took over the city, understood that if we lose the populace, if we don't have them on our side, we can't control anything. And so even this, it was like, I want to say it was MS-13, but I'm going to have to go back and dig and see who it was. But it was like this legit, like bad gang was still policing their own, because anybody who ever takes over a region and wants to try to own it or govern it still has to police their own in order to win over the local populace. And it's kind of fucked up the way that they probably did it better than a lot of American police forces do it.
You're going to get a lot of blowback on that MS-13 comment.
It may not have been them.
In literal defense of Jordan, though, the Sinaloa cartel is specifically known for doing that. Like aggressively, like they were, especially under, I think it was under El Chapo, like they were giving money to like schools and hospitals and like establishing good community rapport. I'm not saying that they're good people, but they know right. how to like weaponize and manipulate a populace in order to maintain order.
And the point there is that is what legitimate, like things that no question about it, people would consider gangs. Still look at it that way. So what is the difference between that and the government?
Exactly. The government's just a gang by another name.
Exactly. They're just trying to win over your support with as little effort as possible to convince you that they're the good guys.
All right. So what's everybody's citadel and bug out and like resilient plans?
Why do you think I moved to Texas, bro? I moved to Texas as like, honestly, like a little bit of a calculated move, just because like, if in my opinion, if there were a legitimate attempt to try and institute a draft, I bet Texas is going to be one of the first states to tell them to go fuck themselves.
Probably.
Like, yeah, maybe I got to be wrong on that. But then if I am wrong and Texas does take part and I they do try calling me up to go, hey, you're going to go over to West Africa and fight this war that nobody cares about. I mean, like, okay, well, Mexico's right here. Like, I got plenty of people that I know of that are spread out throughout Central America and South America. I've rucked before. I can take a couple gallons of water and figure my shit out. Like, maybe I don't make it, but I would rather do that than dying in some war for the military industrial complex machine for no reason. That's my literal plan.
So we have, I think we have already executed our primary
whatever
plan within this regards. Like when COVID hit, we moved out of Nashville and like I said, this is my primary plan. So there's an alternate contingency and emergency, but the primary was we moved out of Nashville, a big city, and moved into rural East Tennessee, where now we have like a farm that we can utilize to grow crops, which we do. We've got a community that is very cut off from kind of the only thing federally funded. Well, there's a big like TVA presence, the Tennessee Valley Authority, but then that's like education is the only other thing that is really like federally funded in a lot of these rural communities. And so when the federal government goes down and I have connections to food and water and like basic health care, like some of the necessities, like I think we can withstand something until they start rolling into tanks into some rural area that doesn't hold any strategic value.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you hit on some stuff there, both of you guys. I mean, from Texas through Appalachia, you're going to have some real hard people and hard citadels that are going to be very well organized, that know how to engineer, that know how to weld, that know how to operate heavy machinery, that have all sorts of redneck ingenuity and everything else. But on top of that, I think it's one of those things, you know, in terms of the United States where I think it's so wildly unpopular. And this is, you know, whether it's, you know, whatever your politicization is, whether it's Democrats, whether it's Republicans, definitely libertarians and people that just have checked out. I think all of these people think this is so wildly unpopular. And I think that's what we're seeing in terms of what's being reflected in those numbers. You know, the idea that the United States government is going to come into our country, right, and leave their little protection of DC and their, you know, their Navy and their armored carriers and the rest of those kind of things and come into the neighborhoods of Americans who are sick of their shit, who are going to try to, you know, for lack of a better term, start some static and take their children away to push them off into wars that have been, you know, demonstrably unsuccessful for our entire lifetime since we were kids. I think it's just a nothing burger on its face. I think this is, you know, one of those things where, you know, it's fun to entertain, but at the same time, it's one of those things where I think it's a pipe dream. It is absolute, like, there's no ghost of a chance that this ever happens.
Do you guys feel like the U.S. has been losing wars for a long time? Other than the war.
Ever since World War II.
Yeah.
Well, what do they say about war, right? It's like nobody wins war. War only proves who's left.
Yeah, whoever's making the bullets and the bandages are the ones who win. Mm. But there was one thing I wanted to add as far as like putting a little bit of more rosiness into this conversation is that like there is actually value in the sense of the more veterans and soldiers that we can bring over to understanding Bitcoin and establishing that like they can defend themselves and their family's wealth and their future and all that stuff. As far as that goes, it does provide an avenue of attack in the sense of not necessarily attack, but like if there were a meaningful like percentage of our armed forces that had the economic fuck you money, basically, to just like stand up and go no, because the military is its own governmental body, like there is a way out that I foresee, as far as like it doesn't have to go down every one of the darkest possibilities. It could just be there is an avenue where the like a meaningful percentage of the armed forces stand up, say no, and then they're like, no, we can help reestablish things and like keep things going without like complete and utter collapse or going to a draft or whatever kind of like absolute apocalyptic outcome you can, you know, fantasize over.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, 20 years ago, an article like the one we started this episode with would have had, I believe, a lot more power. It would have frightened people more. But I believe that there, even if it's a small number right now, I believe that more and more people every day, I know more and more people are realizing that there is reason for hope now. Anybody who has been studying Bitcoin long enough has got to come to that conclusion and reveal the truth that this is hope. That is what it is. It creates hope that did not exist before. And it's just getting started. And as veterans, people that are service oriented, that are here to do work and to contribute, this is the weapon that we can use. It's the, again, we'll say it's a nonviolent weapon that we can use in this race to avoid the war. And that is something that each of us can do, is continue to study, continue to talk to people about it, educate other people, bring more veterans onto the mission, and let's push this thing forward. Because the more of us that are involved in this, the stronger the network is. And the stronger the network is, the more of a threat it is to fiat. And then we keep continuing to grow it, and we grow stronger, we bring more of us into it, and eventually reach that point where we are strong enough to kill fiat. And I'm not promoting, again, any type of physical violence towards another human being at all. But fiat is a monster, and it does need to die. And there's nothing wrong with us talking about destroying that system that has lit, because that system, although it's not necessarily alive, it actually does result in the end of human life. Okay. And we see it with it, with, you know, with these endless wars and this needless violence that we all have participated in. But that, I believe, is the hope that we have laid out here in front of us that has not existed before. And we can thank Bitcoin for that. And the cool thing is, I mean, it's right there. It's not something that's difficult to become involved in. All you have to do is ask questions. I mean, it was only several months ago that I was, you know, it was an alien foreign concept to me. And I just started reaching out and asking people and talking to people. After my dad, you know, my father, I've told you this story, you know, I mean, he persisted and persisted and persisted until finally, okay, there's something to this. And then I just started reaching out to people and asking individuals and the community that exists here. People, they're like, hell yeah, man, let's go. I mean, they want an orange pill from the moment that you say Bitcoin. And they're like, yeah, man, I'll tell you what you want to know. Let's get plugged in. So the community is here. We're here. The individuals are here. It's just a matter of going out and continuing to grow this community, continuing to grow our power and continue to grow our strength. And then we will see more and more of that hope become a reality.
Hell yeah. Sign me up. Let's go.
I mean, I thought we were going to need more than one topic, but you guys have filled an hour and a half. Like it was no problem at all. I really wanted to kind of get to the LK99 stuff, the superconductor. And I had a segue for it there for a second, but it was, you know, with the collapse of an empire, you know, the people that have their hands on a lot of this, you know, tech, apparently alien technology, that's going to come out of this. I think we're in for some good times, you know, if they've got to sell it to the private market and it's not going to be used for warfare and all that nonsense, that, you know, maybe we've got some good times ahead of us. Somebody referenced the Fight Club ending where they sit around and they watch, I guess, all the buildings collapse, and I thought that was, you know, pretty interesting. Like, yeah, you know what, let's watch all of these fiat, you know, nonsensical corporations and everything else that have taken advantage of everybody, you know, collapse. But let's send it around, man, for final thoughts on this, and you know, whoever wants to take the ball first and go, and then we'll wrap up.
I'll just take 1 minute and say that there was a time in my life not too long ago, within the last 5 years or so, where I wasn't too optimistic about the future of the human race. I mean, I was looking around at what was going on in this country. I'm looking around what's going on fiscally. I'm looking around at the fact that inflation is eating people's wealth. And it's very difficult to keep up with that in terms of the way pay increases go, just everything that's been going on, you know. And I'll tell you, I did not have a really rosy outlook. And after understanding what Bitcoin is and understanding what the possibilities are, the potential that Bitcoin can unlock with human beings, when you don't have to run on a hamster wheel chasing a dollar that's forever losing value, you're in a mathematical game that you cannot win. When you finally find something that flips that entire paradigm upside down, finally gives you an opportunity to store the fruits of your labor in a way where there might be some future for your kids and for your grandkids. I'll tell you, man, that has changed everything in my life. I've never been more focused. I have never been more determined. I have never been more on the damn mission than ever before. And I think this is a huge thing. It's probably one of the most important things we will ever do in our lifetimes as men. I'm going to leave it at that.
Amen.
I was actually going to say something very similar in the sense of I was also in a very nihilistic position. Because like when you don't have something that you can store the fruits of your labor, or the excesses of your labor into the future to like try and build up to something, it's like it literally gets to like, what's the point? Like you can't even, it's not even like it's like barbaric times where you can just try and build a little hut or lean to or something. Like that's even more valuable than working to store your time and your effort in a fiat currency is being debased by some geriatric fuck over 1,000 miles away that doesn't give a rat's ass about you. I do, and I also like I'll actually add onto Alex's closing statement in the sense of I think that relationship and that dynamic is also it's part of the solution to fixing the masculinity problem that we have today, because it's a very like very strong pillar or tenet of masculinity of like building something that can be left behind for specifically like your loved ones and your family. And I think that Bitcoin does like provide a lot of maybe not direct solutions, but it does provide a series of avenues to find solutions to a lot of the problems that we have today.
That's beautiful. Awesome.
Good Lord. Yeah. Go ahead, man. I'm just Jordan again.
I'm just going to keep on building on that. You know, that's an excellent point, because we've reached a moment in our history of as a nation, as people, as a planet, however far you want to take that, we've reached a moment where a side must be chosen. Okay. There, it's not possible to not serve something. Okay. If you opt out of being a part of the battles that are going on, then you're really serving the other side. Okay, you've got to, it's such a clear opportunity for people who have that feeling in the back of their soul that they're missing out on a life of purpose. That's what this does. That's what Bitcoin does, is it reveals that life of purpose that each human being, I believe, is wired with. They are hardwired to want to have a life of purpose and meaning. Nobody wants to come here and live their life and then when it's over, know that it was pointless. This creates that opportunity. This creates an opportunity to be a part of something that is relevant and is meaningful and will give your life purpose in a very real way. And the truth is, you've got to serve something in this world. You have to serve something in this life. And if you're not choosing to serve something, then you are choosing to serve something. There is no opting out and not making a choice. Okay, if you're not in the fight, then you're working against everybody else who is in the fight. This is an opportunity for people to get involved in something that is meaningful. And that's to me why it speaks to veterans so clearly, is because we feel it so acutely. We experience that, I believe, in an amplified way that many other people don't. because we have already hungered for it and been in a situation where that is something that we were seeking. That's why it's such a natural fit. And that's why my focus is on educating as many veterans as I can. That's why I'm here in this community with you, because this is our signal to get out to others that are seeking that purpose. Because the challenge is, when people don't have a clear sense of purpose, they're going to seek it somewhere else, and they're going to find it in something that is going to create an illusion for them that they are serving something that's extremely important. It's the flavor of the week on whatever garbage they get their information from, but it's meaningless and it's empty. But this is not. This is meaningful. And this is the purpose that people have been seeking their entire lives. And it's something, again, that didn't exist just a generation ago, but it does now. And it gives us, again, that reason to have hope that didn't exist before.
And now you have Bitcoin Veterans, where you can come once a week and get all that signal from these badasses, including the guy in the closet right there.
Speaking of that guy in the closet,
give your comments now, bro.
Thanks for that setup, man. You just fucking threw up that fucking softball, and I'm just gonna knock it out of the fucking park, Alex. Thank you. I appreciate that. God, thank you for your service.
Oh, shit.
So, I've been talking for a while about, like, we are living through revolutionary periods. Like, this is a revolution, and, like, you need to learn to embrace it. I look very, like, inward. Like, am I being fucking ridiculous when I say some of the things that I say? 90% of the time, yes. Okay. Yeah. Thank you, Alex. I appreciate your agreement. But there are certain things that I hope y'all, like, understand as me just trying to make fucking jokes and be funny. And some things that I really am fucking, like, dead set, passionate, serious about. And as I reflected on this, like, this being a revolution, the more I think about it, the more I think, fuck yeah, it is. Look at, like, so I'm from Alaska originally, and that was known as the last frontier. For those of you that watch Star Trek, the universe is considered the final frontier, right? But what people forget about is the digital frontier. And that thing is fucking infinite. It goes on forever, just like the universe does. I don't know if we can travel on the former or not. I don't know. Maybe we'll get into that in some other conversations. But I know that as far as the digital frontier, we can travel infinitely on that, and we can take it wherever we want. And the thing about the masculinity that Mike's talking about earlier is, I think we are always looking for that. People think that, like, everything's been discovered. Hell the fuck no, it hasn't. Specifically on the digital frontier, it is infinite. It is endless. We can do whatever the fuck we want with that. And we are living through a revolutionary period within that realm. This might just be the beginnings of the building block of what we do for our human civilization to take us whoever the fuck knows where. But this is a big fucking deal. So get on the fucking mission. This is revolutionary. And I don't know in what direction. So just get on the mission and let's fucking find out together.
I love it. It's always a good time to wrap up the show after, you know, going to the infinite space of the internet. For me, man, I don't know what's smoking in that closet.
You got a Kamala La 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 moment right there.
Yeah, it's really good. I love it.
It's all just beautiful and special and great. Okay.
Yeah. We can all obviously be nihilists. I think quite a few of us out there, especially you guys out there in the audience, you've seen what war is up close, very personal. It's affected your life. It's affected your family's lives, your community. I mean, this entire country, I think, is extremely war weary. And I think a lot of us got to that point where we were just kind of like, oh, man. You know, if things degrade a lot further, then we're going to have to, you know, be those warriors that come out of the garden and go back into what we did formerly as young men. And I don't think any of us wanted that. What an opportunity before us then. To have this in our time, I think this is something that is more about legacy. What are we going to do with this technology? What are you going to do with this asymmetric asset now? This idea that you can go out there and start to build a savings, not only for you, but for your generations to come. Your legacy within your family is going to possibly be that of somebody that gets passed down from generation to generation to generation that said, hey, yeah, you remember, you know, old Mike or Alex, you know, back in the day, great grandpa or whoever, you know, that legend that you came into Bitcoin, you know, in 2020 or before. Who's that? The bug assault? He's got to fly. He's coming back at it. Now YouTube's gone. But I think this is an opportunity for you to create a legacy that not only your kids and grandkids and great grandkids are going to talk about for a long time, but literally possibly thousands of years from now, your family members might relate to exactly you by name. And I think that is a pretty important time. Guys calling for peace, guys that are trained in war saying, you know, no more, we got something that we can do. And that's Bitcoin. So I think that's probably where I'll wrap it up. Short and sweet. Jordan, Alex, Mike, Gabe, thank you guys all for hanging out again and spending your time and your knowledge and trying to get everybody on the mission. This is Bitcoin Veterans. We do this every week. Not at the same time, but we're trying to get back on track. 9 o'clock on Wednesday nights if you want to join us. Really appreciate everybody that's out there in the audience. Thank you for the interaction. If you're out there, go out and spread the word. Like, subscribe if you're on YouTube, wherever you're at, share it with anybody. Pass it to at least 5 people. That's the challenge to you guys out there. Let's grow this audience. Let's get more and more people on the mission, whether they're vets or related to veterans, whatever it is. And let's start really doing something in terms of changing the world. So until next time, peace. Bitcoin Veterans out.
Nice.